Hey, it's episode 152 of the Hodgepodge Podcast. I'm your host, Doug.
And I'm Dirty A. As the name suggests, we're going to talk about a hodgepodge of
topics.
From movies, music, TV, and other pop culture events.
Hot topics.
And on this episode, we have author Matt King with us to discuss his novel series, The Circle War. And we'll probably also review The Defenders from Netflix.
More like The Circle Jerk Wars.
Yeah.
You can reach us at thehodgepodgepodcast at gmail.com or over on our website, thehodgepodgepodcast.com, or look for us on iTunes and YouTube and subscribe. Or head on to Facebook, search for The Hodgepodge Podcast.
Wait.
And like our page.
Do they like your page?
And like our page.
Like their page.
Interesting tactics. Yeah.
I wouldn't have called that, but...
Yeah.
And if Matt and I ever get our shit together again someday, go over to the Crossover Podcast.
Also,
I like our page there, too.
Also, KingRights.com.
KingRights.com.
Hey, we can throw that in there this week.
JDouglasSimpson.com. And Alan's website.
No.
Still under construction. It's got the little guy doing the...
I stay off the grid.
It's got the Excite.com under construction on there.
Yeah. It's a naked lady holding a shovel.
Because that's what they should be doing. Yeah. You're for women in the construction.
Yeah. Equality for all. In the workforce.
Speaking of nudity, the Deuce.
I like where this is going already.
Speaking of nudity, the Deuce from David Simon is on streaming right now on HBO Now and HBO Go. So check it out. It's the David Simon is the co-creator of The Wire. And Treme and Show Me a Hero. And it's his new show for HBO.
I like that nudity triggered.
It's about the rise of the porn industry. Yeah, it's about the rise of the porn industry.
Okay. So within 45 minutes, Maggie Gyllenhaal is topless.
Yeah.
So. It took that long?
That whole long.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which actually may detract some viewers from even wanting to watch, but I don't know. Whatever.
She's a great actress.
Yeah, one of our friends would just think she's disgusting.
Really?
Yeah.
Does this one also like Transformers?
Possibly. Yeah. Not that person. Yeah. It's another person.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I think I know who you're talking about. No, yeah, she's good in it too. She's good. James Franco's really good in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they're
it's really and the fun thing is if you're a Wire fan, it's fun to pick out all the cameos from the Wire. And a lot of the Wire casts are in it as like, you know, main roles, but like, you know, picking out like Slim Charles is in there and, you know.
I do that anyway in pretty much any movie.
Right, right.
Where's the six degrees of separation from The Wire?
Where's the little-known Wire cast member in the background?
But because it's David Simon, so you know those people are going to show up. Like, Treme was like, I mean, one of the, Wendell, the Bunk, I was his last name. He was one of the,
Mr.
he was
Wendell.
The main guy.
Yeah.
Was that his name on Treme? No. I don't know.
I didn't know that's how you pronounce it. I always pronounce it Treem.
It's Treme, I think.
I don't know. I've never watched it.
He gives me some knowledge. I buy him some shoes.
I don't know what that means.
From Mr. Wendell, the song. Mr. Wendell. From
oh, God.
Arrested Development.
Tennessee. Speaking of Arrested Development, they're,
yeah,
they're finally filming season five.
Finally.
There's Anus Tart.
Pretty quickly.
We got Anus Tart coming down the street. Anus Tart.
My guess is we'll see it.
I think the spring they said
probably did they announce that because I assumed it would be like March of next year.
Yeah, they said it's probably early 2018.
That's what I assumed.
I'm excited. I like the format that they are.
Yeah, with. It's like a murder mystery or something like that.
Yeah, I'm super excited.
Yeah, it should be good. Lucille. All right. So anyway, movie news real quick before we get into our stuff. Excuse me. That's my salad coming back.
Okay.
Zaxby's.
I'd like to move.
Edit.
Yeah.
The biggest news, I guess, this week was the big Batman kerfuffle that popped up.
God.
Because Matt Reeves, the director of the last two Planet of the Apes movies and soon to be the director of The Batman, had an interview last month or something like that and said that Batman wasn't going to be part of the Batman wasn't going to be part of the DC universe, the extended universe. And Then they made an announcement that they're doing a Joker origin movie for some God knows reason.
No, they've actually announced two Joker movies.
Yes, since. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
One will have Margot Robbie and Jared Leto.
Enough.
And then the other one is like completely separate, kind of like Logan was from the X-Men movies. It's like separate movie,
but equal.
Right. Of course, Martin Scorsese is one of the producers on it, so everyone thinks that he's like basically directing it, which he's not. The director's supposed to be Ruben Fleischer, who did Zombieland. Mm. And because that's separate, people were starting to think that this new Batman movie was going to be separate, like a almost like a DC Elseworlds type thing. And he came back and confirmed, no, he just meant that Superman and Wonder Woman and those guys aren't going to show up. It's just about Batman. That's it.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't think we can be blamed for taking him at his word.
That's right. Yeah. No, I mean, said that.
No, yeah.
Not like it wasn't. No, right. It wasn't misconstrued.
Yeah.
It
was, right. Right.
It's like, no, what I meant was.
I feel like the studio had him backtrack on that.
Probably. Yeah. Now what will probably end up happening, it looks like, it's looking more and more like Ben Affleck will not be in that movie, and it's going to be a younger Batman.
Yeah.
But that might be what Warner Brothers wants. They might want two Batmen to tell two different tales of Batman or whatever, you know.
It's going to get real confusing real fast if it's with all these different movies flying around.
Essentially now they have three different times. One is not connected to this universe at all, which is the Joker origin movie.
They said that is completely separate.
Doesn't exist at all within this universe.
Why are you worried about that right now?
Why are you even doing it? But anyway, and then you have this one, which is
potentially
the Batman, which is going to take place well before any of this happened with the Justice League or anything else. So now you've got
Have they confirmed that yet? That it is going to be an origin.
It's not an origin story, but he I think he did say that this was going to take place. I think it was before, and that's why they're going to.
Or it could be. It could be a completely separate timeline, as well. It could be.
I mean, maybe, but wouldn't that take it out of the continuity?
That would take it out of.
It could. If Flashpoint happens in just if they bring in Flashpoint into the Flash. It could be a completely separate timeline. It's ripped apart, but still in the multiverse, right? Yeah. So, it's like you were saying, we were talking about this earlier a little bit. You're right. Comic book fans will understand this and be fine with it, but the general audience will get confused if they dive too deep into this right now.
Because then you'll have two Batmans going at one time.
Right.
Ben Affleck and whoever the new dude is.
Here's to hoping they bring the pink bat costume into the
place. Yes.
Rainbow Batman.
God, I hope so.
I mean, who's been clamoring for that movie for so long?
They already did that on Brave and the Bold, I think, on the cartoon, yeah. Yeah. That was the lighthearted Batman.
That was Brave and Bold.
It was, both those things.
With Dietrich Bader as the voice of Batman. Yeah, that was a cool show. Yeah, so who knows what's going to happen. I mean, they still got to put out Justice League in November, so...
that's the weird thing, is like, why spin all this weird fucking news right before you're dropping Justice League?
They don't know what they're doing.
They really don't. They still don't know what direction they want to go in.
That's the problem with Warner Brothers, is that, you know, and we've talked about this before, is that when Marvel made their movies, like starting with Iron Man, they were just fucking movie to movie to pay the rent, basically. And then once they started becoming hits, then they were like, okay, now we can do Avengers. And then that blew up. And then they were like, okay, now we're good and we can plan all this other shit out. But initially, I mean, Marvel was just like Iron Man. It's like, and here's Hulk, whatever. And then Iron Man 2 came out 2 years later.
Yeah.
And then they kind of followed after that.
Yeah. DC Warner Brothers, I mean, they're rushing it.
They're really trying to rush through this.
And why? Why bother? You're going to get your money. Like, why are you trying to rush this?
It's because Warner Brothers, you know, Marvel was just focusing on that one thing. Warner Brothers is just like, we just need hit movies. That's all we need.
Right.
And now that's why they're just going to shove it all out, because they just want hit movies. You know, So plus with Warner Brothers, money's like no object. You know, like I said, you know, Marvel was just like, you're like, we gotta fucking
Unlike Disney,
Right. Yeah. No, because this was before. I mean, this is before Disney owned them. So they were like, you know, we got to pay the fucking creditors. Iron Man better be a hit, or else we're done.
Right.
I mean, because if Iron Man, I mean, Iron Man was like, I think it was the second highest grossing movie that year.
I don't remember. It was 2008, right? So yeah. It was right behind Dark Knight.
Too long ago for me to remember. But you know, so I mean, it was a very high. I mean, in domestically, Batman. The Dark Knight made like 500, I think. Mm. And then Iron Man made 3-something. I can't remember if Indiana Jones was more than that or not.
I was about to say, was there that big a discrepancy between 1 and 2?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Oh, The Dark Knight was like... The Dark Knight, it was about 50-50. It made 500 here and 500 overseas.
Gotcha.
And it ended up with just over $1 billion. Which was like, at the time, was people were like, oh my God, Batman movie made $1 billion. And then like 4 years later, Avengers was like, there's $1 billion. There's $1 billion.
No Avatar.
Yeah.
I heard another, I don't know if this is rumor or confirmed or not, that, you know, we were talking about the two Joker movies. There's the origin story, and then there is the Jared Leto,
Harley Quinn,
the love Margot letter,
Robbie, Margot Robbie.
The Harley Quinn Joker movie, and which, thank God, Jared Leto says he's playing Joker forever, as far as he's concerned.
Oh, thank God.
Oh, man.
I was worried.
I was really sad that we weren't going to get.
Well, I was worried they would try and bring Heath Ledger back
to
life.
Well, keep in mind that, you know, they really did him a disservice in the last one by cutting all his stuff out.
Whatever.
So you didn't really get a feel for who he was.
I got a feel.
I would like to thank whoever made that choice.
Hashtag not my Joker.
Yeah. But there's Joker. A rumor that is going to take the place of Gotham City Sirens.
Yeah.
Which, man, what a colossal bad decision that would be. Because people were actually looking forward to Gotham City Sirens. I mean, yeah. Suicide Squad sucked.
Right.
But Margot Robbie was really good. So you take the best part of Suicide Squad and you add in...
Except for when she attacked, you know, a magical witch with a mallet.
With a bat.
I mean, that probably not the best
And then
case
there was
scenario.
A time where she told the guy who murdered his family that you gotta own that shit. So maybe not a great psychotherapist, but
No, she was good.
She was good. She was a good part of the movie, and I was really looking forward to the Sirens movie. And now it may not happen if this Joker Harley movie, takes its place.
Yeah, because they're not going to put Margot Robbie in 3 freaking movies.
No,
which are essentially the same fucking movie.
Yeah,
yeah. Who knows? Stupid. I think I said about that is like it all depends on what their plans are because. Maybe it's possible Matt Reeves is like, oh, no, I want Catwoman in my Batman movie, so
it's just like as much as I dislike Suicide Squad, I'm putting that nicely.
Yeah.
That story was told. The Joker and Harley story was interweaved in there. It was told. You don't need to rehash that shit.
Right.
No.
But they will.
But they will, yeah.
Yeah. And which Batman did they put in that movie?
No. I don't know.
Good question.
Because you know the Batman that
the really warped the really warped one that'll just kill someone in front of their kid.
I mean, the thing is, like, I think the thing I said is like if they did make it like a separate universe thing.
I saw my parents die. Now you can see your parents die.
Now you can know how it feels.
Now you know how it feels.
You know the. I think I said that if they were going to make it a separate universe thing for the Batman, just go get fucking Nolan and Bale and bring them back and do it. You know, it's like, just continue the Dark Knight and just call it a day.
neither one of them have any interest in.
Oh no, yeah. Christopher Nolan is riding high now because Dunkirk is a hit. The other thing, real quick, James Gunn. Was doing a Facebook Live and talked about Guardians 3 because Guardians 2 just came out on Blu-ray.
Yep.
And he basically said, quote, it will shape the Marvel films for the next 10 to 20 years.
Like, wow.
So that kind of speaks to your theory, Matt, about how it's going to be probably mainly cosmic movies going forward, which could be good or bad. We don't know because that's...
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, but, I think they need to start looking out.
Well, It seems like, they have a lot of Earth characters, but the cosmic characters, they have a pretty good corral of. So
I think they said Nova's probably going
to
show up in that.
I was about to say, you need to get the Green Lantern Corps back in. Well,
that's right, DC.
That's DC. But, I'm just talking about cosmic movies in general.
Right.
I think I would love it. I just watched Guardians Volume 2 last night.
Yeah.
Thank you. And
again.
This is only the second time. Like, I haven't... Right. Yeah, I've seen Spider-Man 4 times at theater. I saw this once. Which, given how much I loved Guardians 1, it was kind of a shock. But, man, I liked it way better, I think, the second time around.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. I like the movie. I think it holds up as... pretty close to the first one,
yeah,
for me.
It's like the first one. It's surprisingly emotional, but towards the end, you know, the whole Yondu thing, of course. But one scene that I don't think really touched on me the first time was when they were leaving Ego, and they basically have to leave Quill behind,
mm-hmm.
and everybody on the ship is, you know, screaming at Rocket not to do it, and he's just sitting there staring out at the, you know, the landscape while he's shutting the door, you know, basically making this choice that he's going to leave his friend behind so that the rest of his friends can live.
Right.
Right.
It was a really cool moment.
He's doing it for no one's... He's trying to be rational about it, like, you know, and make a rational decision while everyone else is kind of freaking out around him.
Yeah.
He thinks he's doing the right thing.
Yeah.
I mean, he is kind of doing the right thing.
He is, you know, doing the right thing. And he says it. He's like, I don't want to lose another friend.
Right.
So he, like, shoots Gamora, and then Drax is screaming at him about not leaving Quill, and he's just shutting the door.
Yeah.
It's a well-shot scene, I'll say that. It was well done. And I really like Ego as a villain now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was good. Yeah.
Did we talk about how...
the video?
how they... originally we I know on our original podcast we mentioned how Kurt Russell had said his young self was mostly
turns out that's not so much
makeup,
that's not so true.
Yeah, apparently not. It came out a few weeks ago. No, there was a lot of CGI that went into that. Kurt Russell did not. He either lied or had no idea, but
they showed him a mirror that was a picture of him from the thing, and they're like, "Hey, look how great you look!" He's like, "Oh, I look great!" He's like,
"Yeah, no, a lot of CGI." They backtracked on that a few weeks ago.
That's why I was so shocked when you said you read that it was like, "Oh, it's all present." I'm like, "Really? Oh, that's pretty good." I'm like, "Yeah." But then when they revealed that, I'm like, "Figures." So speaking of Marvel, let's talk about the Defenders real quick before we get into
shout out real quick to Tobe Hooper. Died today. Legendary director of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 1 and 2 and Poltergeist and Life Force. Who can forget?
I did. I'm the answer to that question.
Yeah.
That's too bad. That's
so
too
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, yeah. So he's 70 some years old.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, he and, you know, George Romero passed last month.
Yeah.
So two legendary directors. In the horror arena have passed.
Well, you might have another one because apparently the first impressions of It are very super positive.
I know. So. Super excited.
I cannot wait.
You know what I'm mad about, man?
I might wait.
What? I found out yesterday that for Splatterflix, fucking Buddy Cooper.
I didn't
want
to say anything.
Is going to goddamn be
I
there.
Didn't want to say anything.
The director of The Mutilator is going to be on hand for Splatterflix.
I saw that.
In fucking New Orleans.
Like, I don't want to tell
like, God damn
that.
It. No! I was like, no!
Yep.
Like, the one horror movie festival, the one year, the one time, the week that they choose it, and I'm out of town, and the goddamn director of The Mutilator, which is filmed in my hometown.
Okay.
That's what that claim to fame for that is. It was filmed in Morehead City in Atlantic Beach when I was growing up. And he's from Morehead, Buddy Cooper.
Okay.
And he was a local filmmaker there who made the movie, and it kind of it's originally called Fall Break, and once it hit VHS, they renamed it The Mutilator. Once a distributor came in and jazzed it up the title a little bit.
Right.
And when did they come up with the tagline?
The tagline was for the VHS. It was not the tagline of the original movie. Clearly, that tagline really wouldn't go so well with a movie called Fall Break.
No.
Fall Break had a tagline. I don't remember what it was, but no, the other one came when they changed the name to The Mutilator.
So it's by
sword, by picks, by axe, by.
I love it.
It's so good. It's got like people hanging on meat hooks. Oh, I told our friend. I said if they have signed posters, you get me one. I will pay you back, but you get me one of those posters. I'm so mad there's going to be a Q&A with him. And I'll be like, I'm from Moorhead. I worked at the Oceana where this part of this was filmed. Come on.
That sucks.
Yeah, this is bad timing. Yeah. I mentioned it to my girlfriend, and she just didn't understand why I was that upset. She's like, oh, too bad you'll be having fun in New Orleans. I was like, you don't get it.
No, I won't.
You don't understand me. You don't even understand me.
I'll be sitting in the hotel room sulking.
So anyway, yeah.
Well, maybe Jen can live stream it to you. And you can just sit in the hotel like this.
I'm sure between the two of you, y'all send me pictures to egg me on. And
for the record, I
know she'll get a picture with him.
Probably.
And then send it to me like
mocking. For the record, I was restrained. I said, no, I don't want to bring this up to Alan. She's like, too late.
Yeah,
I already did.
Oh man. I was so mad. It was funny because the week before she was joking with me about what if he comes. I'm like, oh, he's not. That's not going to happen. I was like, no!
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm so upset. Y'all have no idea how upset that
Oh, man. I know how upset.
Where's that going to be?
It's at Caroline Theater.
Caroline. Oh, so it's at Durham.
They just started it last year, but it's like they just show old horror movies. It's for the weekend. They take a weekend and just show.
So it's like the other one. What is the other one?
Well, the other one, you're talking about Nevermore.
Yeah.
That's like new movies.
Oh, okay.
That's new stuff. This just shows like retro horror movies.
Mm. Yeah. Cool.
So anyway, that sucks. All right.
So speaking of horror movies, The Defenders. For Netflix.
What a segue. Oh, transition.
Look at that.
It's not that bad.
No, it isn't.
It's
also no Avengers.
The transition or the show? Because the show was pretty bad.
Yeah, Dirty A was not a fan of this show. I think Matt and I liked it a hell of a lot better than he did, but it's not great either.
No.
If you're ranking the Netflix shows, it's probably Jessica Jones,
Luke Cage,
Daredevil.
Oh, Daredevil. I put Luke Cage right.
Oh, no. For me, Luke Cage, the back
I'm sorry. Sorry. Doug's opinion. Give your opinion. You're like, no. I was like, well, that's a subjective thing, man.
Well, that is not right.
This will all be edited.
Do you put Daredevil together, like season one? Like, are you
pretty much. They're pretty much equal.
They're pretty much, yeah.
Luke Cage is... I only say that because I like Luke Cage. I like the first half of Luke Cage. Second half kind of fell off for me.
The second Diamondback showed up, I can turn it off.
He was kind of nuts.
He did get a little,
he was over the top.
Yeah. Then it's
Defenders. Especially at the very end,
Then it's Defenders, and then way down at the bottom, all the way down at the bottom.
Yeah.
Iron
going down, deeper and deeper, way down.
Deeper, further,
deeper, way down,
further.
Way down.
But that's the problem, is this to me just felt like Iron Fist 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is the problem. Because the thing is that they got too wrapped up by making the Hand the villain. When if it's a thing that's threatening New York, it should have been the Kingpin. They should have made Kingpin. If you're going to make it a familiar enemy, it should have been the Kingpin. They got too wrapped up in this mystical bullshit and all this crap. And I guess that's okay if you want Iron Fist to be involved, but you could have done something.
I didn't.
and to be honest, they should have, like, if you look at the Avengers, the way they brought the Avengers together, and we talked about this, we were talking about this on Facebook. When they brought the Avengers together, S.H.I.E.L.D. is the common thread between all those movies to bring all these characters together to fight Loki. They should have done that with Defenders. They should have made Claire the thread. You don't have to kill her. You don't have to do anything. I thought maybe something happens with the Hand. She gets into trouble. She needs a lawyer. Maybe Jessica Jones is searching for something for her. Luke Cage is her boyfriend. He's in there. And then because the Hand's involved, Iron Fist shows up. And then that way you thread it all together. It brings them together faster, and it gets to the point. This just kind of meandered and took forever. I mean, it started out basically as a Jessica Jones 1.5 beginning.
You thought it was going to go sort of that route.
Right.
Because Claire introduces, like Luke Cage to Iron Fist.
Right.
Sort of. Mm. And then you think that thread might continue, but then no, then it just, then all of a sudden here comes fucking, Stick. Here comes Stick to, Hand Fist, like the other group in, and then
Jessica Jones is pulled in because she happens to get a case that
right, yeah,
happens to connect to where the Hand is operating. Yeah, it's ham-fisted and stupid the way they get them together.
Yeah.
When they had it at, like, a blueprint staring them in the face in Claire.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
that's so easy.
She threads literally...
You put her in every
She's a spoke for every show.
Yeah.
And yet, for some reason, they're like, I don't know how we're going to bring them together.
How about
they're all... They have one common friend.
Yeah, yeah. That's how that works, typically. Yeah. You know? But, you know, then the... you know, they do bring them together, and then it's like, but for what? Like, I feel like any one of these people could have probably taken care of this problem.
The plan is, it's stupid when you finally find out what it is, but it's also very vague throughout the entire show. They're always like, but what about our plan? Dun, 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 and then they cut away, and then they don't talk about it, and you're just like, what is going on?
And then you're like, oh, okay, you just want to be immortal? Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like they need more...
What's the sinisterness of that? Like what?
Like the five of them need more immortality juice.
Yeah.
And that's it. Only like, the five of them.
And you're like, oh, okay.
All right. Well,
sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was stupid. I mean, when they kept on talking about like dragons and shit like that, Fing Fang Foom should have jumped out of that fucking hole.
And you thought, and you think, oh, but they're going to destroy the city. But it's like, even they mentioned that, but it's like, but your plan to destroy the city doesn't exist anywhere.
Yeah, what are you going to destroy it with?
Yeah, what do you because we it seemed like you had some kind of tool, but then we find out that's not what that's for at all.
Right, you were just like playing Minecraft.
You're mining. Okay.
The other thing is too is that I said to Matt that it kind of has the feel of like Dark Knight Rises, whereas like the problem is too big for those heroes to handle, like. They're talking like because if it had been like a dragon or something like that, that's something you call the Avengers for. It's not the street level fighter, you know. It's not like all the kung fu fighters.
Yeah,
like that.
The blind ninja.
Right, blind ninja. You know, that's not who handles that kind of problem.
That was the best interaction with Jessica Jones.
Oh, Jessica Jones. Yeah,
fun of fucking Matt Murdock.
It was the best part of the show.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, everybody, all the characters bring their strengths and in Iron Fist case weaknesses to the party. And
it's someone's messing with my chi again. Oh, no. Oh. Right in the middle of fighting it. That doesn't work.
Focus that chi, motherfucker. It's a mixed bag. It goes on way too long.
I thought there were good parts to it. I really loved the Matt Jessica interactions. That was the best part
really
of the show.
That really was.
Mm-hmm. I thought Luke Cage and Jessica Jones had a really good moment there.
They did at the end. I was thinking about that.
He's with Claire,
and she's just like,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And when the look on his face when she's like, "So you want to get some coffee?" And he's like, then he turns around real quick, like, "What did you say?
Sweet Christmas. Sweet Christmas."
Never said that.
No, he did.
But yet, Iron Fist told you that he was the immortal Iron Fist, like
many, many times,
78 times,
and explained it.
But they do call that out, which was funny. That was funny when they called that out.
Yeah,
did he tell you he's the immortal Iron Fist?
Yeah, I loved it when they made fun of Danny because he's an idiot.
And he is,
especially the. I forget who was said
you're the worst Iron Fist ever.
Like, you're speaking for me.
I think that was a Chow. Was that Madam Chow?
Madam Gao.
So.
Yeah, you're the worst Iron Fist.
Yeah, so Stick calls him a thundering dumbass.
Yeah. all these are true things.
All these, everybody's speaking the truth there.
But overall, it was kind of weak.
They made him the linchpin of the series.
Yeah, they shouldn't have done that. It should have been Daredevil or, you know.
Yeah.
And you said it's funny that you said it just went too long. Yet this is the shortest one of all of them. This is only 8 episodes, and yet we feel like it went too long.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
It should have been 6.
That's a problem. For this storyline, because it didn't have anywhere to go.
Because honestly, the only reason why they had to make it longer is basically so they could get them all together. Because the story itself is like that's like a feature film.
That's all it is. Why not have Kingpin in it with the hand and have them having their own little fight over the city, and that causes
something happens
that causes a turf war in the city, and then the defenders have to clean up the turf war between the hand and Kingpin.
The Kingpin is technically helping them fight the hand, but then at the end of it, they're stuck with the Kingpin as the ruler of New York. Basically,
anything would have been better. Which would have led perfectly into Daredevil 3,
because what they think with Daredevil 3, spoiler alert, everybody, what they think with Daredevil 3 is that it's going to be born again. Frank Miller's born again.
And I don't want to,
or at least parts.
I don't want to give anything away as to what happens in Defenders, but like, second to last episode, when when a main character in the show kind of meets their end, and I was just kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I guess that happened. Whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't even. It wasn't surprising. It wasn't climactic to me. I was just like, all
the
right.
villains were weak. Sigourney Weaver was. She gave a good performance, but
she didn't have anything to do.
But she didn't have any motivation.
And then Elektra didn't. They made up a motivation for her too. She was. Just, okay. Why?
She's just crazy. Yeah, Elektra's just crazy. But the other ones. The other. Fingers of the hand. That fucking guy from Iron Fist, what's his name? Bataku?
Oh, Bakudo.
Bakudo. That guy's fucking awful. I hate that guy.
He's terrible.
That character sucks.
Yeah, Bakaki. Yeah.
Then they brought, and then they were talking about this other guy, the mysterious guy who's the super badass. He's just like some dude, like, hey, what's going on?
Hey, yeah, this is me.
He just speaks Japanese. That's what makes him badass.
It's because we can't understand what he's saying.
Yeah. Oh my God.
We think he's badass. He's really just telling us his grocery list.
Yeah. And then
I have to go get soup.
And then I'm sorry, but I get that, you know, the way that the love interest between Elektra and Daredevil plays out is so awful.
Yeah,
like, at what point do you just be like, okay, maybe she's really trying to kill me, I guess.
Yeah, she's just crazy.
No, yeah. Okay. At what point, like, are you like,
stop, guys, I can fix her, okay? Stop, alright? Yeah. Like, no.
She's a maniac.
It's like he's blind.
Wow.
Blind in love.
Aww. Love is blindness.
Yeah, she was mad.
So, Defenders, you know, it's not terrible. You can check it out, but...
Or is it terrible?
You don't... It's not going to be as bad... It's not as bad as probably the Inhumans is going to be.
I mean, oh, my God.
It's watchable. It's not terrible. But it's just
disappointing.
It's very disappointing, yeah.
It's no Avengers.
Like, No.
There was no feeling like, yeah, whenever they got together. It was just like... Finally.
Exactly, right? It's not like, it was almost like nonchalant.
Yeah. They're sitting down in a restaurant now. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Cool. That's a nice shot. I mean, Danny's just an insufferable ass.
Now that's Pork. God, you're weird.
Yeah.
God, you're weird.
Nice ears.
They're horns.
The Punisher will be later this year.
That looks really good.
That's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, hopefully that'll be good. And then I guess what's next after that? Jessica Jones, season 2.
Maybe season 2, Jessica Jones.
Yeah, they're filming that.
They're not. Are they filming Daredevil yet? I don't know.
That starts in October.
Okay, yeah. So Jessica Jones will be next. Then.
Yeah.
So it'll be Punisher, then Jessica Jones season.
Which
2.
they've announced.
David Tennant will is be gonna back. He'll show up in it.
As gotta,
I hope it's like just a mental image, or
yeah, it will.
It'll be hallucinations.
It'll be flashbacks because I mean he's fucked up her head, so clearly he's still in there.
Yeah,
but there's no way he's still out there.
No,
which is too
unless
bad.
They pull a Kingsman.
Yeah,
I already hate
that decision.
I hate that.
I don't even care what the story.
I hate that decision twofold. I don't understand other than the star power to bring him back. Mm-hmm. Into the story, and two, if you are going to bring him back, it should have been like a surprise. They shouldn't have announced it in the trailers and on the poster.
In the trailer.
Yeah, in the trailers and on the poster, he's even... No, you should have made it a surprise in the movie.
It's just, I had this feeling after watching the first one, which I really love the first
one. Oh, yeah, it's a great movie.
But watching, you know, at the end of it, I'm like, God, I think if they bring him back, it's just going to... be total shit.
Yeah.
Well, guess what?
Well, guess
it's
what?
Total shit.
It's total shit.
How did you do it? Well, you see, Exy, I took this pill. Anyway,
I'm here and I have an iPad.
Yeah, see, I got an iPad. Yeah. You see, I was hurt. Yeah. You see that?
I was dead.
Chip chop chip.
Chip chop chip. What does that even mean?
It's probably some like heads up display or something like that.
Probably that he can't see because he has no eye.
This is lost on me.
Anyway, yeah, I want to see the movie and where they go with it. I'm not saying it will be bad, but I'm officially tired of that fucking trailer.
Oh yeah,
I don't want to see it anymore.
I want to see this more than I wanted to see John Wick 2, which I never saw John Wick 2 because I felt like it didn't need to be made.
That's on Blu-ray now. Isn't it?
I think you can probably see it.
I don't know.
See, it is. I don't know. Maybe I would feel like it would have to be, but I don't know. Yeah, John Wick was good.
Yeah, because that came up
before. I like John Wick 2 a lot more than a lot of people. I'll tell you that much.
I liked John Wick 2, but to me it was pretty much more of the same. So it wasn't much different. To me also the thing that was stupid about John Wick was like, hey, guess what? Everybody's a secret assassin.
Well, see, that was fine to me in the universe they were trying to create. But
right. they went to a hotel of assassins.
Yeah, right.
No, that's fine. But when you're in public.
But he hasn't seen it yet. He
so what?
But no, I'm not saying spoiler. I'm just saying he doesn't understand.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the first one.
No, the second one.
Oh, yeah.
No, practically everybody he meets is a secret assassin.
But it's essentially like.
How you making money?
It's essentially like a video game movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's what it is. Yeah. It's like. What Hardcore Henry wanted to be.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah.
What it was, but it was a terrible movie.
God, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh,
good.
Sorry.
Fucking horrible.
Sorry about that.
Thanks a lot.
All right, so that's Defenders.
Let's talk about some better superheroes.
Avengers!
No.
Oh, the Circle War.
Our friend Matt King recently self-published his long gestating.
I didn't know where that was going. Gruelingly long series.
Long gestating trilogy of novels, The Circle War.
He was actually gestating when it
and menstruating.
They are available on Amazon.
That's true.
.com and Kindle.
Yes.
And at kingwrights.com. You can order them there.
Yes, you may.
Buy from kingwrights.com.
I liked it. I mean, I think you should.
But, does it matter? Does it matter? Or
doesn't the charity get some?
I think if you go through my site, so that's why I sent people to that.
Okay. Did you set that up or did they set that up for you?
No, I set that up.
Oh, neat. Nice.
Yeah.
It's because the way I did mine was that if you bought through CreateSpace, I just get more royalties. Where if you bought it through Amazon,
you greedy son of a bitch.
SOB. No, mine goes directly to the white nationalists.
Wow.
This is
the final episode of the HodgePodge podcast.
You know, because the white man really needs a hand.
I mean, he just can't catch a break.
I mean.
Since like 1500.
Agreed.
They were talking about that on Bill Maher.
I could have checked right now.
He's like, they were saying about the Trump supporters are like, which are all white people mainly, that they're like.
What?
Like they were like, they find that. They find that white people are the most discriminated against race and ethnicity, and that Christianity is most discriminated against religion. He's like, yeah, they can't catch a break, can they? He's like, how the fuck is
Wait,
that?
Let's not get on to
represented in government. My God,
just because other people deserve equal treatment doesn't mean any treatment is being taken away from you. You fucking assholes.
Anyway,
how did we get on this topic? I blame myself.
So, The Circle War focuses on August Dillon, who is the main character.
It's me. He told me it is not, but is not confirmed to be based on me.
That's true. That's what I signed on Alan's book. Yeah.
And he is a former merc, I guess.
Yep. Like with a mouth, but not the merc with a mouth.
I see
what I did there?
I see.
And he basically gets chosen by. Well, why don't you explain it? It's your fault.
I was about to say.
Well, no, you were going to say really great.
But it's been a long time since I read it, so I'm probably going to forget some shit.
That's okay. The Circle War describes a group of gods. Right. So there are these nine gods in the universe. They're essentially the pinnacle of human evolution. They're not really gods like we think of them, they're just. The end game of humanity. You've lost the Christians. I have. And there used to be 10 of them, and that's what starts this conflict between them. One of them, Amara, is essentially a religious zealot. She believes that their immortality is unnatural. She thinks there's a heaven awaiting them, and that the only way to get there is to end their lives, basically. So her end game is committing genocide with all of the gods. And as you might imagine, some of the other gods don't really want to go along with this plan. And these guys are too powerful to fight for themselves, so when they have any sort of conflict, they choose people to fight for them. And that's where August comes into it. Meryn, who is the weakest of all of the gods, is sort of leading this charge against Amara. And to August's eyes, things are great. He's got all of these powers now. Basically, he can heal himself, and he's a little bit stronger. He's already a great fighter. So he is really looking forward to all this because this is the this is what he's always wanted, was to be a hero. But he doesn't quite understand that the, you know, since Merrin is the weakest god, he is therefore going to be one of the weakest heroes. And so he ends up going up against a lot of people who are way more powerful than him. Mm-hmm. And in this first book, it's basically...
Godsend is the first book.
Godsend is the first book. It's the beginning of the Circle War. It's the days leading up to it. It's when everybody is sort of choosing sides and seeing where they're going to fall in this conflict. But, you know, the immediate fight is going to be Merrin with one of Mara's sort of generals.
Right. It's cool. I've read it.
We just talk about it. We focusing on Godsend now, or...
I mean, in general, the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love the series. Godsend was a piece of shit, but I love the series.
Right, yeah. Really no, that's after, the general consensus.
After that is what I was
after that, it's really good.
If you can get through the first book, yeah, I mean, it's a slog, but...
That's the quote I put on the cover.
I realized as I was saying that, slog. I'm setting this up as if to say that I did not enjoy the first book. No, it's a really good series. It's very engaging. You know, I'm not one I can't really rank it in a series of books I've read because I don't.
Well, because of the three of them, that it's like 75%.
That's correct, exactly. At least for the past, you know, 20 years.
Right.
But, I mean, it's a very engaging story. The characters are great in it, well developed. I enjoyed reading it from end to end. Seeing where it went from one story to the next, I mean, it's the characters are very complex. There's not like one dimensional, which is what I like. You know, I'll say the, not the general, but what Michael becomes like the anti-August, I guess, if you will, to one of she's Amara's right-hand guy, right? She's what he creates, right?
She creates Michael.
So she creates, yeah. Right. So, yeah. Well, Gemini. So she gives Michael powers to become powerful, kind of like Merrin did with August. So they're kind of sparring. They August and Gemini become like the immediate foes, if you will. And but Gemini's very, he becomes evil, but he's got a backstory that kind of is filled in throughout the series that gives him lots of dimensions to him.
And yeah, I really dislike villains that are just evil for evil's sake. Yeah. So I tried not to do that.
Except for Michael Myers.
Right, except for Michael Myers, who's just pure evil.
Yeah. Where did you come up with the idea for this series?
Oh, God. You know, before I started writing superhero stuff, I didn't know exactly where I wanted to take my writing. It was mostly, I guess I would describe it mostly like a Twilight Zone. The stories were all kind of Twilight Zone-y, sort of sci-fi, horror, fantasy, just a mix of everything. And then I actually wrote this story. It was initially a novella. Mm-hmm. And I got the idea driving down to the beach, and there is nothing between here and the beach. So you basically just can do nothing but daydream the entire time down to Wilmington.
Got a lot of accidents.
One of them gave me powers, I'm not going to lie.
A lot of people were killed.
A few people died, don't worry about it.
This series is dedicated to all the people that perished.
To all the people I mistakenly ran over while I was daydreaming. All
five dead, two of them cops.
All right. So I passed by a lot of train tracks, and I started to think about what it was like for somebody, you know, to just travel on the train lines.
So a hobo superhero.
That's fantastic. What August was initially.
Fantastic.
He was a hobo superhero.
But with no shotgun?
Right.
He didn't need it, though. He had swords. He didn't need it.
No, he didn't.
He was a mercenary it was a government.
It was like a
issue,
private military company. Yeah.
Like a
Blackwater type of deal. And that's what he became. But, you know, the first iteration of August, he didn't have the same personality that he had in these books. He was.
Oh, I see. When you were
the first
making
time I came
him
up,
in your
yeah,
head.
he was like this brooding, sort of very serious guy. Bear, who is kind of his friend throughout all this.
Bear
Lawson.
His hetero life mate.
His hetero life mate, Bear Lawson. He was an idiot. I mean, he was kind of like a of Mice and Men.
Yeah, like, she yeah. Little, or,
oh, like a Lenny.
Not, yeah. Well, Lenny was the
Lenny
other
was
one.
The little one, right?
Lenny was the wasn't Lenny the smart one?
Whatever, the big guy from right. Mice and Men.
Okay,
whoever that was.
Yeah.
No, George is the smart
you're
one.
You're right, George is.
Lenny, yeah, Lenny.
Okay,
is.
Lenny was the big one. Yeah. So
he's like
Dober from The Stand.
I was just gonna say it's Bill Faberbein from The Stand. M-O-O-N spells I'm crushing your head.
Alright.
Yeah, and you know, it was the two of them and they were starting out on this whole thing with the gods, and it was like, I don't know, 70-100 pages, and I didn't know what I wanted to do with it, and I just left it. And then I decided years later I wanted to write a superhero universe, like a connected superhero universe. Mm-hmm. And I went back to this, and this became the seed for everything that I've written since then.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, so August got a complete change in character, so did Bear. Ray stayed about the same. He was about the same in the original. But Marin and Amara were a little bit different. Talos was in there from the beginning.
Oh, yeah. I can never. I went through many iterations of picturing Talos in my head.
He changed every book.
Okay,
because so
I could never like pin down like what does Talos look
in
like?
In my mind, I always think of him as almost like a Venom type thing, like almost like that big hulking black liquid sheen thing.
Yeah, he changes. Yeah, he's got this sort of weird oily sheen to him all throughout, but he does change the way
he's
he looks.
A bodybuilder, so he.
That's baby oil.
Yeah, he oils up before every chapter.
Before every
it's
match.
A little gross, but you know, I want to give him some dimension. So he was in there from the beginning too. But a lot of the characters that I really grew to love came in the second book, which is the Last Winter. Mm-hmm. That's where Eris shows up. Ion. The Last Winter is where they start to build sort of this Avengers like alliance. That's when both sides are set. Is in the last
right.
winter, and that's when the war really begins.
I'm terrible with character names, but my favorite one ended up being I can't remember if it was Parabolus. He was the ego who
Perilous.
Perilous, but I think it starts with a C.
Saranus.
Yeah. He had the big ego, but
like
eventually, you know, he was fighting for the good.
He's
but he had
asshole.
He had
yeah.
the godly ego.
Yeah, he starts out with he's a god who loves being a god.
Yeah, he's very very narcissistic.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And he's very just to give people like you know an anchor point. He's very early Thor-ish.
He was
say.
He is
but,
because I liked him.
That's how Thor is in the beginning of that movie. He's very arrogant.
He ended up being like my favorite character.
He starts out. In Godsend, I want to say. Yeah, it was in Godsend. Marin goes to talk to him about, you know, maybe helping her out.
Right.
And he's busy, like, he's got his own planet where people worship him, and he loves that. Mm-hmm. And he just soaks it in. Like, he makes her go down to the planet with him so he can be lauded by other people.
Say something else.
Sorry.
I saw the deuce.
I had to cut that scene out. No, but he is definitely a god that really just relishes in being a god. And he is made to fight by the end, as they all are. So
yeah. He's got a good arc.
Yeah, I liked Saranus a lot. He was really easy for me to write, which I'm not sure what that says. But
because you were very narcissistic.
That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, very godlike.
Did you have, I don't want to say a favorite character, but one that you kind of got maybe more emotionally attached to as you're writing the series and as it's winding down?
The character I had the most emotional response to towards the end, I would say Bear. I loved writing Bear. Bear was a lot of fun. Eris, I loved Eris. She was really fun to write. Ion, I liked Ion a lot.
Yeah, he was fun.
He's probably hard to write.
Was very hard to write because he's a weird character. He's a sentient ball, basically.
Yeah.
He's like this machine that one of the gods created to study mankind, and eventually gets turned into a champion.
Like a magic eight ball.
Yeah.
Will we win this?
But
it is decided.
He's because he's got all these years of studying humanity behind him. He's nihilistic, fatalistic. He basically is like. nothing you do matters. Right. So what is it, you know, yeah. what do you care?
A lot like Dr. Manhattan-ish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It does. He does remind me a little bit of Dr.
Manhattan. I was going to say Vision in Civil War, where he's just like, well, when you showed up, this happened, and so basically humanity's going to be destroyed. Thanks, Vision.
Yeah. He does have that sort of air about him, like, you know, you're all humans, you're all going to fuck everything up anyway. Right. You know,
what is this millennium mean more than the next millennium that you might save? Like, what?
Yeah, and once he sees the actual stakes and what's getting ready to happen, he, you know, jumps in the fight as well.
The twins were creepy AF.
Yeah. You're talking about the Tria?
Yeah.
And they're also, the Tria, there's also, it's two, right? You have two short stories?
There are two. I put out two short stories ahead of this.
If you're afraid to, you know, spend the cash, you cheap fucks, if you're afraid to do that, there are two short stories to get to know some of the characters.
Yeah, the first one's called The First Death of August. Right. It's literally the first time August dies. And the second one is called The Tria, and it is an origin story for one of the champions, or a set of champions on the other side. It's this guy that controls this force. It's basically my version of magic in this universe.
Right.
I don't do a lot of explanation of where this magic comes from, because I don't really think it's necessary. But essentially, he is the controller of it so far, and what he wants to do is kind of like what Ego ended up doing in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Like, he wants somebody else to have the same powers that he does.
Right.
So he essentially hires these people that create, you know, children, basically clones.
Right.
And they just keep trying with all these kids, you know, to see when it, you know, if it's going to take or not. And he shows up in the Tria to see the progress and see, like, which one of these kids that he's going to be able to choose to fight in this war with them.
But, so what you're saying,
he manipulates and controls them, yet they also have their own
it manifests in different ways.
Yeah. Right.
So he's basically showing up at, like X-Men camp to see which one of the X-Men that he wants to take with him.
Right.
And there are two that stand out, and one of them is this little girl, Tiali, who is, I don't know who she would be analogous to.
Scarlet Witch, maybe, in the comics.
Kind of Scarlet Witchy in that, you know, she's got so much going through her head, and she's so incredibly powerful that she's chaotic, and you don't
know. Or Jean Grey.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
The girl from The Ring.
The girl from The Ring. Yeah, she essentially can see forward and back through time, and so she's just locked in her head at all times,
right.
just reading or watching the story play out.
Right.
And she's incredibly powerful, and so he thinks he's got, you know, he's just struck gold. But she's so chaotic that it's he can't control her. So.
Akira.
Tetsuo. Yeah, but that's actually included if you buy the book. It's included in the second book.
Ah, so there you go.
Yeah.
So is it in the paperback version too?
It is in the paperback version. Cool. Yeah. You'll find it at the end, because the Tria is mentioned in book two, but they really
come they don't out. Appear until like
yeah book, book three. Book, the really third book is when they really yeah.
That's when they meet the Tria basically. Right. August right. And then
that's an awesome battle.
Hmm. So basically, what you're saying is James Gunn ripped you off.
He ripped me off. Yeah, Ego. Yeah, he totally ripped me off.
Yeah.
Ego is a ripoff of Mordred. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it happens.
I knew it.
But as a whole, the three books set the stage for everything I write from here on out.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know how much we want to give away here.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. Story, that's why. Yeah.
But you did mention that you finished with the first book, or are you almost finished with your next book?
I'm over two-thirds of the way done with the next book.
Okay.
And this is going to take place millions of years after this series.
In the same universe. In the same universe. But fast forward.
I will say this. I hate when characters die and then come back to life. And I hate the way comics do that.
Yeah.
So you will never see that in any of my books.
Right.
Until you do. I will say that you might see somebody mentioned. You might see things that you recognize from the original three books. But nobody's coming back to life. if they died in the first
game. I was about to say, we're assuming anyone dies.
Yeah, not that anyone dies.
But natural causes over a millennia.
I mean, we're talking millions of years.
That's gonna,
they're not going to be hanging around.
Right.
But they're all gone.
The question is, did they get their juice? Their everlasting
they did
juice.
Not dig underneath New York City.
Did they get their substance?
Get their substance.
The substance.
It might as well be called the juice, sorry.
What is it about those shows? They won't name anything. It's like the incident. It's the Avengers. It's the Avengers fight. You can say it.
That's why when we were talking about the DC stuff and how the TV stuff is separate, which on the one hand, I think before we always said that was a bad idea. But if they were going to play it the same way that, you know, Marvel's doing it, where like they're together, but not really. It's like, it's kind of dumb. It's like the incident and, you know, the substance and this and that. It's just like the guy with the hammer and the big green guy. It's like, are you like contractually not allowed to say Captain America
or like,
you own this stuff. It's like, you know, it's not like it's, you know, I think in Arrow, I think they've mentioned Batman, I think. Or they've alluded to him that Batman might exist.
I know they brought up Gotham. I don't.
Yeah. But you know, who knows?
Let's circle back around.
Yeah. you started it with the substance.
The substance.
When you're mapping out how to write the series, did you have an end game in mind, or did it just come later as you're writing the story, or did you know you wanted to go from A and then you had your Z already mapped out?
I knew
in your process.
I knew the last. Well, without giving away any spoilers, there are basically three main characters where I knew exactly how their stories were going to end.
Okay.
And that is essentially the end of the books.
Okay.
The last probably three or four major scenes I knew 10 years ago.
So you were working knowing your pretty much your ending.
Yes.
So that's how your process worked.
I didn't always know exactly how I wanted to get there.
Sure.
Eris, I'm trying to remember when I came up with her. I think it was after I wrote Godsend, and I was thinking about who I wanted. Because that's when I had to start building up these characters from the other gods, you know, the other champions.
Right.
So she, I think she came up after. Same with Ion. But as far as the way the series wrapped up, I had that pretty much in my head for a long time.
Did you feel like you had to slow yourself down from getting there too quickly, or did you?
Well, I think a lot of people do that. When you're writing a longer series, like especially when you know how you want it to end, like you want to get there.
You knew you wanted three books. Is that what you?
Yeah. I had three books mapped out, and it actually it turned out almost exactly like I was picturing. I mean, you think a lot of, you know, something along the way would have changed, but essentially the way the character arcs ended. That's how it was planned out, you know, cool. 8-10 years ago.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
You had that vision so far ahead that you could just roll with it without a multitude of changes, which is, I would imagine, is usually the case.
George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, pretty much, right.
I mean, wrote himself into a goddamn corner, and now he's like...
Well, like 5,000 corners, because that's how many plots he's got going on right now.
That was, do you know, that series was supposed to be three books. And then he's like,
I'm just going to keep going.
It's going to be too big for that, because I'm an idiot.
do you have, in your process, do you have any kind of superstitions, or like, you know, when you're writing, do you have a certain manner you have to do it in? When you were working on these books?
I don't know about superstitions. I know where I tend to work best and how I tend to work best.
Loud places.
Loud.
People screaming in your ears.
Yes, actually. places, you know, where there's a lot going on around me, like a lot of white noise, I tend to concentrate a lot better.
Just zone it out. And...
I match up. I have, for every book I write, I have basically a set list of songs that I've listened to during the entire
time. Now that you say that, I've heard you mention that before in some posts and stuff about how you when you're creating these playlists.
Yeah, and those scenes I was talking about towards the end of the book, I had specific songs tied directly to those scenes. Like when I listen to those songs, I am picturing things that are happening in that scene.
Well, hopefully you can get the rights for those when the movie comes
out. Oh, sure. That would be totally easy to do. Yeah. Get some of these bands back together. Yeah. They love it. I definitely work better in certain ways. I can't write as well, like, just lounging around the house. I have to go out and go somewhere to write.
Gotcha. You're kind of that way too, aren't you, Doug?
Yeah, there's too many distractions at the house. YouTube is the enemy.
Yeah.
Well, that's literally anywhere you go, though. Yeah.
But no, but see, when I go out, I don't connect to Wi-Fi or anything like that.
So for me, it's just going somewhere. If I go somewhere with a purpose to write, then I will write.
Because that's what you're there to do.
That's what I'm there to do. Right.
Gotcha.
And I give myself like a time, like I'm here from here to here, and I'm going to write.
It's like setting a work schedule.
Yeah. And then he writes for 20 minutes out of 2 hours.
Yes. But they're good 20 minutes.
I mean, solid focused 20 minutes.
Get a lot of good stuff
passing
out of that.
It out. Yeah. Especially when you're coffeed up.
Right.
And all that caffeine.
Get all hopped up on goofballs. And...
Yeah.
But that's probably the closest I have to a superstition.
Gotcha. That was a bad word. I couldn't think of the word I really wanted to use.
That's a pattern. Everybody.
Yeah,
everybody has their thing.
Yeah.
Did you pop a big bottle of bubbly when you finished?
Oddly, no. And same for when I got the books the first time. It was a cool moment. I didn't do anything really big to memorialize it or anything, but it was.
I'm sure you felt that sense of accomplishment though. Like
it is. Yeah. It's good.
Like you said, that's a decade worth of a decade worth of work that you've been.
Yeah, looking at those books, that's 10 years.
Yeah.
Nothing beats. Speaking for myself, nothing beats the feeling. If you're self-publishing, nothing beats the feeling of hitting the button that says it's now available and that people
delete
can it.
And the wrong button.
But now you know that people can go and read it. It's really cool.
I don't want to detract, but I was watching that new Duplass show, the Duplass Brothers, that Room 104.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And this past week's episode was a young writer who had left his laptop at his mom's house. And he's an Indian person.
Right.
And he calls her up. And he's trying to get her to figure. He's trying to explain to her. This is like 1997.
Right.
He's trying to explain to her how to copy and paste so that she can email him the file, and she deletes the whole fucking book.
Jesus Christ.
The whole book that he was working on. She just.
I'm so paranoid about that.
It's gone. All it's blank all of a sudden. I hit what you wanted, which was Control Z. Like, no, I said Control C. I was like, oh my god, that would be like horrific.
I would die.
I mean, I bet y'all backups upon backups upon backups.
Yeah, it's on like five different machines. The stuff I'm writing at any point in time. That is a horror story.
Now, you know, you mentioned earlier how you don't want to, you're not going to include characters that would come back. And I'm sure a lot of that just in the story that you're telling now is just organic. You'd have to shoehorn that in.
Mm-hmm.
But have you yet found yourself kind of like, oh, I could just write this one back in, or, you know, just almost like what I'm asking is, do you feel like you completely finished the story you wanted to tell, or do you feel like there's something else left?
No, I it's all there. Like, I don't have anything else to tell about any of those characters.
There'll be prequels.
There will not be prequels.
Yeah.
I can't express how much I hate the idea of prequels. I will say this, though. There is one character that has direct impact on this new book, and it's mentioned within the first chapter, basically. There are two chapters. But it's not a huge influence.
I gotcha.
Yeah. It's basically one thread to connect it to the old books, and then this goes its own way.
You can go your own way.
Yeah, you can go your own way.
I was thinking one character that could do a good book, call it a prequel if you will, a solo book, clearly would have to be a prequel. But again, I'm bad with character names. August Boss.
Coburn.
Oh, Coburn. Coburn. Yeah.
James Coburn.
I could see a solo book of Coburn. How
Coburn and the Horseman.
How he became who he is and leading into the Horseman. Because he's a pretty badass character.
Yeah, I like Coburn.
Yeah.
Coburn in the first book is August's boss, basically, when he was at a market. this paramilitary company. And he considered August to be
protege,
the protege, the guy who was going to take over for him because Coburn's old as dirt. And when August basically deserts and abandons, you know, him and his company, this guy takes that as a personal affront.
Yeah, I mean, he goes to hunt him down. That's how the book kind of. Mm-hmm.
While August is thinking, "Yeah, I'm going to be this hero," he's always looking over his shoulder because this guy—he knows this guy is coming after him.
This guy's an evil motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah. He's not—he's not a happy man. Yeah. And you know, it kind of sucks for August because all this guy does is search for people, and bring them in for his clients.
Right.
So that's not the kind of guy that you want after you, I don't think.
Right. He has the connections. He'll find you. He knows how to find you.
And August knows that even though he's quasi-immortal, if Coburn ever found him, he would find a way to kill him.
Right.
I mean, it would be... He would be the person to do it.
Right.
So that is... Coburn is one of the villains in the first book. Gemini is sort of the series villain.
Yeah, he's more developed overall.
Right.
Yeah.
But Coburn is more focused in Godsend. Right?
Yeah, August and Gemini's relationship is developed over three books. But in the first book, the real immediate threat for August is Coburn,
right.
Who's after him.
And you can't read the book without picturing James Coburn.
James Coburn as Coburn.
I wonder why.
There's just something about it. I don't know what it was.
He's shooting holes in my suit. That's just mean. That's just mean.
Yeah, Michael was fun, scary read because he was just so unhinged on so many different levels.
I personally felt bad for the kids.
You do that, but that's the thing. You do feel bad for, especially when you find. Especially when you find out it's not of his making. Like even his own psychology is not of his own fucking making. Like you know, his dad's got to be doing that. I was actually a pretty good dad.
I don't know what you're talking about. We had a good time, I thought, growing up.
Like I took you to a baseball game. I don't know why he wasn't.
Remember? You know how you gave me a mug to number one dad?
So you do feel bad. And it, you know, it plays out very well. But yeah, you wrote that character, like I mentioned, to develop very well because you do end up feeling bad for this
villain
that's done so much evil. I mean, not to give it away, but just short planets.
He's extremely powerful, and he's hurt a lot of people.
He hurts a lot of people, and just
and in his mind, you know, it's
you're like, oh man, legit. Poor guy.
I know,
like,
poor fella.
About these little scamp.
Yeah,
I wouldn't go that far.
No. I mean, he's not a great guy, but it's. I wanted you to know how he got that way and why he was that way.
No, I enjoyed that.
It shouldn't be black and white. It should be, you know, shades of gray.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed that you didn't just, you know, here's a ball of fire that's all encompassing and destroying, and that's what it does.
It was 50 shades of gray? 50.
That's the books you're writing, sir.
I have unusual
taste. No, I'm not. Mine are good.
So I don't know if you want to talk about like the publishing process, because that
absolutely.
I don't know.
You can. I already know.
Yeah,
it's a pain in the balls.
So if people wonder, like, how do you come to this decision to, you know, self-publish versus traditional route?
Not the first choice always.
No,
For some people,
for some people, that's what they want to do. They want to
always
be in control.
You're right.
I started out this thing thinking traditional was the only way I wanted to go.
Traditional being you contact an outright publisher.
No. We've got to get an agent.
The first thing you have to do is
the agent sells you to the publisher. Yeah.
Okay. And an agent accepts it, and then an agent sells it to a publisher.
So an agent pushes it to the...
Yeah, a lot of publishers won't deal directly with authors.
No.
That makes sense.
You have to have an agent.
Okay, yeah.
So my initial thinking on this was, this is the third... Godsend was the third novel I'd written. The first one I wrote, sent out, got zero response, mm-hmm. which is typical. And a lot of, I mean, this, I think, you can attest to this too. That's when people quit. That's when most writers quit.
After book one, and they put so much into it. And...
Yeah.
There's something that, you know, I don't want to make it sound like arrogant or anything like that, but you either have it or you don't. And Matt definitely has it. And the it is the ability to do it, but also the drive to do it. It's a lot of work. People will just randomly say, I want to write a book one day. And it's like, good luck. Because it's a lot of work.
Right.
It's very discouraging work too.
Well, not because, even.
Because you'll read your stuff and it could be great, but you'll read it and you'll be like, this is garbage. It's fucking garbage. I was flipping through Great Big World the other day. I'm just like, I should have fixed that. I should have fixed that. Right. And you're never happy with anything.
Yeah, you're your worst critic.
And the other thing is too, you never know where to end it either. So
until
when
you met me, you're your worst
critic.
Hey,
so,
hey.
So you're right. Some people after the first book, if they don't get anywhere, they will quit. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, it's in itself to write a book. It all takes a lot of work, but
right.
Yeah, to pour your heart and soul into something like that, have it rejected, and go back.
It's
again.
Something. It's something that it's a need. It's like it reminds me of that line in Watchmen: "We do it because we're compelled to do it." You know, it's like. That's what it is. It's like a need. You have, there's a story that you want to tell. Only you can tell it. And it's like this overwhelming desire that you have to do it.
Do y'all have that, I won't call it a cliche, but y'all ever like wake up in the middle of the night with an idea and you're like, oh, I got to write this down.
I'll wake up in the morning and I'll say, or if I'm in the shower
I'm
in the shower, wash my hair, I go, oh man, that's a great scene. I go to my phone, I start like typing something out. Or if I'm driving to work, I'll do a voice note. I actually did a couple voice notes for Maxim Ultra the last week.
I see you in the shower, I just think of Police Academy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh. I didn't mean to hijack your answer there, but there are some people who will only write one book and then they're like, I'm done, yay.
No, that's a lot.
Captain Miles.
But for
it won't go away.
But for writers like us, like we're constantly. I mean, I have so many fucking ideas. I don't have the time to do them.
Right.
I have to.
But do you keep a journal of ideas and decide like this is.
Oh yeah,
start ranking them kind of thing.
The book I'm writing now, Prism. I was jotting notes down on it throughout writing the end of the Circle War series, because I knew I wanted a female lead.
It's about the Philadelphia cable company called Prism.
It is, I knew a little bit about her. I knew where she came from, and I knew how she was going to tie into this.
Oh, so Prism is a person.
Yes, and I knew how she was going to tie into the rest of the Circle War after it. That ended.
Does that get distracting for you guys? Like when you're like you're trying to focus on finishing a story, but then you have this other train of thought.
Some people keep two or three projects writing at one time. I can't do that.
That's what Kevin J. Anderson said.
I can't do it.
He said you should be working on something. You should be working on.
I'll never finish.
Things.
I never finish.
Yeah, it's hard.
Well, you run the risk of really getting engaged in this thing over here,
right.
And then you just don't even steer back. To I mean, I realize if it's like work, you gotta sit. A timeline, but I would think if you're doing that, then you're like, oh, I'd rather work on this over here than even finish this.
There's
here.
Nothing I love more than starting a new book. That's my favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
Is start a new story.
There's just so much.
There's
so much potential.
Yeah.
There's so much potential. Yeah. That's why I love opening chapters. I love the first two or three chapters of a book. Because those are my favorite to write.
The night was
moist.
But the other thing is too, is that, you know, when you're creating, like for the other thing that the other dirty little secret that people don't know when they say they want to write a book is that they don't understand that 80% of it is editing. It's all editing. And like the writing is the best part. You're like, yay, this is so much fun. And then you get, oh, wait, my book is 10,000 pages long. I have to really edit this down.
Yeah, and you got to get through that. In the end, I would imagine you basically reading that thing.
I don't know how many times I've read this books. It's
it's
staggering amount. But yeah, I think you have to do. There's a temptation to let other people do it for you, like send this out to an editor.
That's a bad idea.
I think you need to do. You need to get to the point where you're good enough to at least get your book presentable, and to where the editor really just needs to clean up stuff.
When you can see your own, when you figure out what your own weaknesses are,
you need to be your own story editor. I think.
Gotcha.
The biggest thing I would
say. That's a good point, because if you send it out to an editor, the way they may determine to edit it, could actually alter the story itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The best advice I can give, personally, I can give to any writer is get with a writing group.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, see, in talking with both of you, I've seen where both of you have had, like, I don't want to go say, like, massive changes, but you've been able, with the help of others, you've been able to say, oh, it sparks an idea, like, oh, this is where I needed to go with this. Or, oh, you're right, it would work better if I kind of reorganized the structure of what I'm working on here. And you sometimes you're so close to the material, you can't see that yourself.
Yeah, that's the caveat to editing yourself, is that you do get too close to it and you can't see the bigger picture. That's when you need outside help.
Right.
To sort of let you know, like, this is where the story maybe isn't as clear as you think it is, because you're so close to it and you know everything.
I mean, let's face it, if you write, and again, this is all conjecture, because I've never written shit other than, like, a seventh grade essay, right? But I would imagine, like, when you're writing, if you write something, that's like your baby. And so, of course, it's probably, in a lot of ways, perfect. Like, no, I don't need to change this. Of course it's perfect. I wrote it. I know. Mm-hmm. But obviously, that's what critics are for, right? So you got to have other people read it and make sure that it works okay. And then you have to make sure that those people are people that will be honest and not just
oh, it's great.
Wonderful. Right.
Yeah, no, you don't want to give it to people like that.
Right. No.
Enablers are...
The other problem is, though...
Bad word. Yes, ma'am.
The other problem is... Phantom Menace. The other problem, though, with the flip side of working with a writing group, though, is that writers are the most critical fucking people. So it's like they tend to also, like, really, like, nitpick stuff.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, you might give them the same chapter 9 times.
Well, it kind of loops back to what you said earlier, whereas...
You have to know when to cut it off.
You said it's never going to be...
Perfect,
because you're always going to see something you can change. So at some point you have to say, I don't want to use the term good enough, because that implies that it's not where you want it.
Right.
At some point, like you said, you got to cut it off and be like, this is where I'm comfortable with it. Because otherwise, you could probably go on for months.
You'd be a George Lucas. You'd just be going back and saying, like, oh, I should have done this. So let me go back and add all this stuff. And it doesn't, I don't think it always helps. I think
it does. Retracts a lot from the story. Sometimes.
I know personally, like I said, I started Godsend 10 years ago. I'm a different writer now than I was 10 years ago. I'd like to think I'm better writer than I was 10 years ago. So it was tough to go back to Godsend and not feel like, oh, I want to redo this and this and this and this and this.
Right.
I had to stop myself from doing that, and I got it to the point where it just told the story how I wanted it.
And then going back, so you to the process.
Oh yeah.
So you get you would have to get an agent.
Yeah. So the process is, you know, you finish your story, and it has to be finished.
Yeah.
You finish your story, you start sending out samples to agents.
So the editor process would be before you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you're going to get an editor,
you get the finished product, then you get the editor.
I got it sent something I workshopped through the writing group, so it was good enough to send out. And like I said,
that's what's great about a writing group.
Yes. So like I said, this was my third book I'd written. It's the first of this series, but the third book I've written. The first one got nothing. The second one got nibbles from agents, but nothing. So the natural progression, I think, is with this one, is that, you know, now is when I'm going to start getting some real traction.
Is this the same agent you used for all? Different agents? Like, how does that work?
Well, you query agents. So you basically, you have to send them a letter saying, here's what my book's about. Do you want to read it? And it's so subjective. It's like...
It's the same thing as if you're an actor looking for an agent.
Yeah, you send out your 8x10.
I
think I should be... I'll be great for this role. And a lot of times, you don't even send them a lot of your writing. The most they'll ever ask for is like 2 or 3 chapters.
A chapter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're like, send us the first chapter or 3 of your book. That's if they accept anything at all. A lot of them are just like, send us a query letter. You have 1 paragraph, essentially, to sell the entire thing.
In other words, it's more or less them subjectively picking random entries.
Yeah, it's a test of your ability to summarize your book in a paragraph.
Yeah. Right.
To make it so that an agent will want to sell it.
And it also has to be what they want to buy at that moment.
Sure. It's such a crapshoot.
It is.
It's so easy to take it personally, too, because you think they're just rejecting you. And why would you reject this? It's it's all based on the market and what they think will sell. Mm-hmm. And you could have the greatest book in the world, and they would look at it and go, well, that's not really, nobody's buying those books right now, so right. we don't want to take the chance, because the publishing industry is, to put it mildly, in sort of disarray. It's not...
Well, right.
I think it's better, I think it's yeah. better now than it was when you started. I think so, too, but
it's
like,
it's everything was...
Well, certainly when you first started out, yes. 10 years ago, yeah. I mean, that...
They were talking.
What was going to happen when?
No,
they were talking about it was going to die. And now I would say,
well, the media has certainly shifted. Yeah, the media has certainly shifted a little bit. Yeah. But
it's like vinyl.
Yeah.
Vinyl's now made this huge comeback.
It takes so long. Is it vinyl? Like, yeah, right. Paper books are still outselling. I want to say
ebooks.
Yeah. Okay. And you know, well, there's not a Barnes and Noble on every corner anymore. Borders is gone. I mean, the smaller booksellers are thriving. It's not the huge booksellers that are doing it. It's the smaller ones.
Yeah.
And Amazon.
of course, small little...
The giantest of all of them. But the point is that it's a risk, basically, for them to take your book on. And you have to sell them on the idea that they should take a risk on you.
If you do you end up paying them? Or how does that work?
No, they take 15% typically right. of your...
They can sell the book,
if they can sell the book,
then they'll take any specific percentage that.
And if any agent asks you to pay money, to never send it to them.
That's
never.
A scam.
That's a scam.
Never pay an agent anything ahead of time. Okay. There are no reading fees. If there's a reading fee, it's a scam.
Okay.
But essentially, they agree to take your book on, and then there's a process where they pitch it to publishers, and that's the bidding process, and then the publisher will take it, and then. If you get an advance, I think the agent will get a cut.
And now you've had some firsthand knowledge of that.
Yeah, so this process,
middle part, right?
Yeah, with Godsend, I sent it out to a handful of agents early on. I decided I wanted to do it in waves, so I picked like 10 or 15, sent it out to that. If nothing came of that, I went to the next wave. This started in 2012. Like I thought, the progression... It happened. Like, I got more requests for materials. And this time I actually spoke to an agent, like talked to him on the phone. They wanted to talk about the books. And when I did that,
which seems like I'm on someone's radar because I'm actually talking to someone. I'm personally connecting with this person, as opposed to here's a generic letter.
Yeah. Here's my cover letter.
Right.
And when I was talking, it gave me some insight into the whole process in speaking to this agent, because she was very nice, but she was also very upfront. And like, she's like, she likes the book. She likes the story. If it's going to sell, she's like, you have to take out a lot of the fantasy. And I was like, well, what do you mean?
What is that? You realize what this book is about.
Like, this book is about gods and monsters and superheroes, right? It's like, she's like, well, yeah. But in order for it to sell, you need to take a lot of that out at the beginning. And maybe at the end, hint that the gods might actually be real. And that...
So you're telling me to write a completely different story.
Essentially. And I was thinking about it, well, all right, so what if I did take this out? What am I left with? I'm left with a man who is
a crazy guy,
insane.
A crazy guy who's thinking up the... Like, you basically, it's like the... You end with him in a padded jacket in the cell. It's like, it's all in his head.
So now, as a reader, you're in this guy's head for the entire book, and you're like, this guy is
what?
Crazy. Like, what are you talking about?
I know what you need to do. See, you make it an autistic kid who's got a snowball.
Oh, God, that would have been great. And, I ended the call, and I thought, no, that's not what I want for my story. I don't want it to be this, like, quasi fantasy, I want
like a gotcha book,
like surprise, it's actually superheroes. No, I wanted that up front. And
this
it starts
is,
that
this
way.
What this is about. It does, right? Right,
right from
face.
The start, it is a superhero book. So I was encouraged that she liked it, but at the same time I was like,
how many years ago was this?
This was 2012, so it's okay. Like 5 years
still,
ago.
Still, I mean, superheroes are still a big thing at that point.
Yeah, so 4 years, I mean, that's the year of the Avengers.
Okay.
But there aren't a lot of superhero books,
right?
And so it's a
you're
big
right,
risk
you're right. There's
because
gap between
what publishers feel is that editors feel too is because when I went to Dragon Con last year, they talked about this. Is they said superhero fiction as a novel, they're like, it's not really a thing. It's like if people feel if you're going to do superhero fiction, go work for Marvel and
it's
DC.
It's basically either
if it's superheroes, it's either sci-fi, it's in the comic books.
Fantasy, right. or it's fiction, right? It's right. Nonfiction or sci-fi fantasy. Right. That's it. Right.
It's not a genre. Right. In prose form.
Anyway. Sure.
They think it needs to be a graphic novel, comic book type of thing. And where I'm looking at stuff like by Kelly Thompson, who she actually writes for Marvel now, but she wrote The Girl Who Would Be King, which is a great book, and it's a superhero book. And that's actually one of the people I look to in forming like what I want to do with my books, because she self-published that. Hmm. It was a Kickstarter for her, I want to say. And she was kind of doing this on the side as she was doing she was rising up through the comic ranks. Mm-hmm. So she's what some people would consider a hybrid author. Authors that go the traditional route and they'll write the book for the publisher, but then they'll write other stuff that they want to write and they'll put it out themselves.
Mm-hmm. A lot of comic writers do that.
So they make the name for themselves doing the comic book stuff, and then people will find them.
A lot of comic book writers do that when they'll go to Marvel and DC and write all the superhero stuff, and then they'll go to Image Comics, which is all creator owned, and then they'll do the stuff they really care about with Image Comics.
Like here's the stuff that's going to pay Jonathan the bills. Hickman. Here's the stuff that'll pay the Tom bills. King. And then here's the stuff I want to be doing.
Tom King does it.
Jonathan Hickman, Fraction,
Carey, Mike Carey, isn't it? ML Carey,
I should have looked at me.
The girl with all the gifts.
Right, yeah.
That's wasn't it Mike Carey?
I think so. I can't remember. Anyway. I think it was like initials.
And Kelly Thompson, she writes Avengers now. And she also writes
Avengers book she write?
She wrote Avengers. She wrote A-Force. Okay. And then she's written Captain Marvel with Kelly Sue DeConnick, which is really cool, I thought. She's done Josie and the Pussycats. She's done Jim and Holograms. Right. She's doing, I think she's helping out on Star Wars now.
Hmm. Maybe she's doing Dr. Aphra.
No, I think she's doing Captain Phasma. Like she's doing Captain Phasma comics. Nice. But she writes these books on the side and she does it herself. I gave one last attempt to one of the big, I guess, in the top four sci-fi fantasy publishers. They actually accept user submissions.
They're local.
Yeah, they're local, which is also nice.
Yeah.
But I sent them Godsend, and he wrote me back after 9 months, and basically said, yeah, we really like it. Our readers don't like books that start in the middle of the action. So can you write a different beginning? I thought, okay. So what I ended up doing was just writing one more chapter, and I put it in front.
That's in front of the finished product.
I left it in there. Okay. Yeah, it's in the finished product. It's basically in August.
It works. It works.
And when he meets Marin for the first time. Uh-huh. So it's kind of like the pre-title sequence in Avengers and movies like that, where you have that opening scene, like with Loki and the cube and the opening of Avengers, and then you see the title screen and then the books.
It's so weird that they have their... They have their audience down to a science where they can make that declaration just so emphatically that, you know what, none of our audience likes this. So that's after 9 months. Did you hear from them periodically?
No.
Or just
I sent it to them. 9 months later, they got back to me.
Okay.
And they said, here, if you want to, you can do this and resubmit it. And I thought, cool. So I took 10 days and I wrote a new chapter. And I said, here, does this work? And the guy was like, what are you doing? You got to go back in line. And I thought, okay. So I had to resend them the entire whole book, wait 9 more months.
Well, honestly, like, that sounds dumb even for them. Like, then they just have to reread everything again. And I know. By that point. Like, that,
I didn't understand it, but I was like, all right, whatever. All right. I sent it back in, and the whole time I'm writing. Like, I'm deep into book two by that point. And then 9 months goes by again and he gets back in touch with me. He's like, yeah, we like it. We want to read it. So here's what's going to happen. I'm going to read it and then I'm going to pass it around to all the other editors. They're going to read it and then we'll get back to you. There is no timeline. And I thought, okay. So like 8 months goes by. So what are we up to now? Like 26 months?
So yes. So in this process, at any time in this process, your book is sent to these people.
Mm-hmm.
If at any time in this process, before you even heard from me, you decided I just wanted to self-publish, you're not obligated to them in any way.
No. There's no contract or anything.
No.
To be nice, you should send them a mail and say, like, look, I'm taking this out of consideration. Come on, I'm doing it myself.
Yeah, okay.
So after 8 more months, I emailed this guy. I was like, just checking to see, like, where you guys are, because I'm almost done with the second book and I'm going to start the third one soon. And he's like, oh, that's great that you're keeping it up. I don't really have a timeline for you yet.
But when you wrote them, I assume you told them this was written as a trilogy that you were writing.
I'm done with book 2. I'm going to restart book 3. And he's like, that's great. And nothing else.
Didn't even answer your question.
Didn't answer my question. Just like, sorry, we don't, you know. He's like, there's like 2 dozen books ahead of you. And I was like, okay, I don't know what that means. You could have had 3 dozen, last year.
Right.
But the frustrating part of all of it was that it got to the end, and this is the final stage before acceptance, right? This is like the last thing. Got to the end, and essentially they were just like, it doesn't fit in our library.
After all three
years of going back and forth. 3 years. And for them to just send me like a really short email that was just like, sorry, just doesn't fit in our library right now. Good luck. And
this story makes me so fucking mad.
It just felt like such a kick, kicking the ball. I mean, it's just like,
you think you're getting somewhere. You're like, clearly, like, they should know who I am now. I mean, I've been dealing with them
for 3 years. I've been going back and forth with this dude. And to get what is essentially like a form letter.
And in the end, you're nothing more than an email to me.
You're just like, here. And it's not even the rejection, honestly. It's, that sucked. But it's like, at least tell me why.
Some sort of constructive criticism
that, like, next time would help me out.
Yeah.
Nothing. Like, after 3 years, you can't even give me, like, a, you know, here's what ultimately didn't work for you.
Maybe they're worried that, I don't know, maybe they're worried if they do that with everyone, then people will just be like, well, I can fix that and send it back to you.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know. But it, either way, it's fucked up.
Yeah, it sucked. And that's when I was like, okay, at this time I'm almost done with book 3. I'm like, I'm just going to put them out myself. And, I decided to put them all out at once, which is, I don't know if it's a smart thing to do or not, but I didn't want people to have to wait from
it's
one book
to
another.
I think it's probably 6 of 1, 6 of 2 of the other type of thing. Right.
Yeah. Cause I mean, the whole thing is I wrote these books for, these are the types of books I want to read. And this is how I would want to read them. Like,
you'd want to be able to finish the story.
Yeah, I don't want to lose track of the story 2 years later and have to think about, oh, what happened again in that book?
Right.
I want to go from one to another. It's like I called it like the Netflix method of releasing books.
Exactly,
like,
right.
Here, there's
the shows are all out there for you to watch. Yeah. You can watch every episode. You binge
watch
them
all at once
to.
If you want, or read them over, you know, 2 or 3 years. I don't care, but they're all there for you.
Yeah.
So that was that whole
process. They're great books, and they should have been picked up, but they're available for you now, audience, to purchase at kingwrites.com or Amazon, directly from Amazon.
They're available on Kindle and paperback, and Diamondback is coming.
Say Diamondback, I quit paying attention.
Limited edition Diamondback books.
Right.
They're coming for you.
Yeah.
real quick, before we wrap this up, shout out to the illustrator who did your covers. They were real cool, too.
Yeah, Jorn Zimmerman is the guy that did the covers for them.
They were neat.
Yeah, it's got the first book, Godsend, has got August on it. The Last Winter has Eris, and Ascension has Gemini on the covers. He did a great job, I think, making them cohesive. So you could tell they're part of a series.
Yeah, yeah.
He designed an entire Circle War emblem with its own, like, the font that he used is some weird thing, but it actually spells out the names of the gods and, like, all this stuff. He did a really good job. He works for Ubisoft.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. He did. Yeah, they look really good. The books themselves, the physical books look great.
Yeah, he did a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Congratulations.
Thanks, man.
Go buy these books, or we'll punch you in the face.
It was a decade of the man's life. Don't let it go to waste.
Just buy the boy's books. Just go and buy his books.
Another thing I'm putting on the back cover.
He's not hurting you. Buy his books.
What did he ever do to
all
you?
All I wanted for you to buy the books.
I just want you to buy the books.
Buy the boy books.
Yeah, so go buy The Circle War by Matt King and kingwrites.com. And our next episode will be...
Can you find them on Amazon by searching Circle War, or do you need to search for...
I would search Matt King.
Matt King's Circle War will take you to... not only the three books, but also the two short stories associated.
Oh, there you go. Cool.
So that's easy enough.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, our next episode will be a review-orama. Three movies, Dirty A and I need to discuss.
Probably more.
Logan Lucky, Wind River. I had to be sure not to say Wind Wiver.
Right.
And,
River.
And Brigsby Bear. Brigsby Bear, which is a movie you've never heard of. Probably.
I mean, I've heard of it.
What we saw. And we'll see you next time. Thanks, folks.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. Thanks a lot.